We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal Boys and Girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there, my sad, sliced friend, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm okay. My stomach, it's sort of a sad stomach Sunday for me. We don't need to go into the gruesome details, but it has nothing to do with Oregon's offensive and defense performance against Utah. It is completely separate from that. Other than that, I'm okay. The house is quiet. I'm able to reflect on a true sad slice Saturday, right? Did we not have three top 10 teams that just got demolished?
We had three top 10 teams get demolished in the form of Oregon, Michigan State, and Wake Forest. I was thinking more of a stop, they're already dead Saturday.
Stop! He's already dead.
Just, you know, a bunch of pets' heads falling off here. Teams getting blown out. Every top 10 winner won via blowout with the lone exception of Alabama, who was pressed by Arkansas. We'll talk about that game in a little bit. And as it went, it turned out the best games of the day were not the featured games of the week. We had some undercards that I thought were interesting that we'll do our best to recap here on the show. But all being told, yeah, the featured matchups that we featured as part of like our quote-unquote headliner section on the preview show back on Wednesday, for the most part, none of those games ended up being all that good, Dan.
Correct. I think that's right. And we had some key injuries at a couple different places that affected things. And all told, it was a very fun week 12 because of the storylines that have now shifted. If you're a playoff person, that's at the top.
Yeah.
But across the sport, with bowl eligible teams with really nice second half turnarounds or fades or continuing issues, I thought it was a very informative, instructive Saturday. So I'm actually pretty pumped to talk about it.
Don't forget to go on out to solidverbal.com. You can read all of the articles that we post on a weekly, ongoing basis. We had Connor stop by.
Yeah, we did.
On the Solid stream on Saturday morning. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't done that. Connor puts together the Solid Slate and I think does an admirable job every week trying to blueprint out what your Saturday should look like from a watching perspective. But we had him on. We're going to bring Travis on at some point here before the end of the year. Solidverbal.com is where you can find all that fine content, in addition to the subscribe links, the follow links, if you want to follow along to everything that Dan and I are doing. Verballers.com, as ever, is where you can go and get access to this show, all of our shows a little bit early, get access to the Patreon Discord community, and some of the bonus stuff that we put out on a week-to-week basis. And last, but certainly not least, SolidGiveaway.com. SolidGiveaway.com, it's a free way for you to throw your hat in the ring and enter to win a signed Robert Griffin III RG3 mini helmet. It is the matte black Baylor helmet. It is awesome. Just go to solidgiveaway.com. Again, free to enter. You just need to go through a few steps before you can get your name in the running, but gotten over 2,000 entries so far.
Damn.
I would imagine with many, many more to come, knowing the size of the audience here on the show. So go on out there, solidgiveaway.com, and we will draw the winner, I guess, after conference championship week. And then we're going to do it all over again. We got some other stuff that we're going to give away on a month-to-month basis, Dan.
I love it. I can get you anything signed Jeff Schwartz you want. You name it, I can get Jeff to sign it.
All right. Well, before we dive in, let's allow the Verballerhood to dive in. Here are your week 12 reverbs. Have a listen.
Nice.
This is Savvy from Mad Beach, Florida. I'm not sure what she did to get my dad all upset, but when the Seminoles won, he was kept on yelling, lock that up, Ty. Girls, you were wrong.
Dan, Ty, this is Dylan in London.
This is Ray calling from Louisville.
Ty, Dan, this is Jeremy from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And guess who just got birded? Let's see, Oregon, Michigan State, Maryland, Georgia Tech. This might have been called Slade Saturday instead. Thanks.
What did I tell you on the Solid Saturday stream? Baylor over K-State. Backup quarterback, no problem. Lock of the week, Pick'em Bears.
This is Tyler calling from Beaver Stadium in the third quarter, and Christian Bayo just threw his not first, not second, but third touchdown pass of the game. Dan, Ty, is the backup better than the starter?
Ty, how about that freshman Fiesta Flame Broiled 55 burger Notre Dame dropping Georgia Tech on Senior Day today?
Kudos to the Harvard Crimson beating Yale this afternoon, where in the Ivy League, it just means more.
I just wanted to say it's darn impressive that the Huskers keep fighting every single game. I don't know what else to say. Iowa has bad corn. Go Big Red.
This is Ryan from Seattle, and I just wanted to congratulate Nebraska on their all-time FBS record, 7-1 score loss in a single season. You know, if nothing else, Scott Frost knows how to lose a good game.
What did 2005, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 18, and now 2021 all have in common? Those are the years that NIU has won the MAC West. I'm trying to think of another FBS program with as much sustained success, besides maybe Alabama, who, by the way, NIU is 1-0 against all time. Go Huskies.
Dan, Ty, I hate this second-to-last week of the season because you get all these playoff contenders, and I just need, like, little nobodies to just be destroyed. I mean, Charleston Southern is losing to Georgia by 49. Prairie View is losing to A&M by 49. Michigan State is losing to Ohio State by 49.
Beating Michigan State 56-7. It's not about winning a football game. It's about sending a message.
As with an Oklahoma and Nebraska fan, I just watched OU shank a 25-yard field goal and have an offense built entirely around the quarterback. And I've got to ask, does Oklahoma have a little bit of Nebraska in them right now?
I'm drinking a beer at my mother-in-law's house. Just watched the Lehigh game. Go Engineers. Have a good day.
It is 1 o'clock Eastern time, and there have been 10 combined punts in the Rutgers-Penn State game. I think we got them right where we want them. Go Knights, baby.
Hey, Dan. I'm currently sliding in my second gluten-free vegan cheese pizza into the oven on this Sad Slice Saturday.
Hello, Coach Mullen. This is Trent Krim from The Independent. I do know that you gave me some grief last week for my question. Yeah, much appreciated. In retrospect, you know, little harsh, but also this week I do have one follow-up question, which is, how do you plan to spend your $12 billion?
Your Louisiana Raging Cajuns are now 10-1. Allons. How did we lose to Texas?
Country roads, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia. Mountain mama, horns down, that Texas face.
Hey, Dan and Ty, this is Jackie from the Mean Streets. Just saw the Lehigh Lafayette game. Just want to remind everybody, Lafayette sucks.
Whoa, Jackie coming in hot. Who approved that? Who approved this anti-Lafayette sentiment as I wear my Vermont Catamounts shirt? If you're watching this, if you're on a Patreon level with us, this is just anti-Rubenstein slander, and I will not stand for it.
Jackie coming in hot early this Sunday morning. Thank you to one and all. Great batch of reverbs. Dylan, as ever, does an admirable job cutting those together. We appreciate his fine service to the podcast, Dan. Yeah, we got to start with the Oregon game.
What?
I apologize, but it's just something we got to do here on
the
show.
If the number three team in the nation loses by 31, I suppose.
We got to start there. So, yeah, they lost by 31. It was the Sean McDonough, Todd Blackledge game at 7:30, 8 o'clock, whatever, out in Utah. Utah, man, they were fired up at Rice-Eccles.
They were.
Quite the atmosphere. They had the gray unis, the hand-painted helmets, which I liked. They looked the helmets looked a little airbrushed bowling ball to me.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I was digging the unis.
Far be it for me as an Oregon fan to comment on another team's uniform choice, but biggest home game of the year. If you're the Utah Utes with your beautiful reds and blacks, I don't know if it's crimson. Excuse me if I'm not getting the shade wrong here. But I like to see those colors pop. You know, you got Sean McDonough and Todd Blackledge, taste of the town. You got an actual production truck there in the parking lot of Rice-Eccles and in Salt Lake. It's a huge, huge game, right? You have a playoff team coming to town, a potential playoff team. Whatever. I think uniforms are fine. Do whatever you want. It's your team. Which version of me would you like to start with? Would you like to start with the version of me that is sad about Oregon, that gives some non-generic compliments to Utah for a game very well played, or just the general tenor of the game itself?
I can do the general tenor of the game itself. I think people tune in for the unfiltered, unfettered version of Dan Rubenstein as it relates to Oregon. Here was the tenor of the game, and correct me if I'm wrong. Oregon couldn't run early, or really at all, and that forced them to pass late. And as Todd Blackledge said on the broadcast, Oregon's really not built to do that with Anthony Brown. It's just not their game. Mayor Cristobal, head football coach at Oregon, said at halftime that he saw they were getting a good push along the line. Booger McFarland reacted negatively to that. I did as well. 38-7 was your final. For as much as we've talked on this show about Oregon and the Glory Boys and rising up to meet the moment away from Autzen under Mario Cristobal, it didn't happen here. Utah had 208 yards and 4 touchdowns on the ground. There was no answer in this game for Tavian Thomas, who just ran like a dude as Utah clinches the Pac-12 South. Did I get the general flavor of this game correct, Dan?
I think so. Yeah. Utah was the better team. Utah is the better team. They came to play with a better game plan, and they were able to execute that game plan and make plays that were there, take advantage of situations like very good teams do. This is clearly a team that is not the team that lost to BYU and San Diego State early, I believe with Charlie Brewer, right? That's Cam Rising has come on, and I think he's only lost once, right?
Yep.
Cam Rising has. 6-1, 7-1 with Cam Rising. So the energy in Rice-Eccles is incredible. Everything you said was completely true. From my perspective, the things that affected Oregon were, in order, Utah being good. Utah being good at football.
Sure.
Two, a complete failure to execute and do the small things on offense. And then three, getting off the field on defense, because they were able to generate 3rd-and-4s, 3rd-and-8s, 3rd-and-11s, whatever. And they were just not able to get off the field, which has been an issue all season long. And then after that, the next issue is they are so beat up for whatever reason, as all teams are or can be by this point in the season. And also, it's why Mario Cristobal recruits as well as he does, to have the best backups, to have the best third-string dudes. And it showed, because I am not part of this team. Oregon had guys on this team who were inexperienced and freshmen or whatever, making plays, coming in and making plays. But on both sides of the ball, they were down 3 essentially starting receivers, guys who have started multiple games this year and had to rely on freshmen. They've been without CJ Verdell now for a few weeks, starting safety, a couple starting linebackers. They're beat up at corner. And that's all okay because they recruit at a level where you're able to plug guys in. But against a team as good as Utah, it hurts. It absolutely hurts. And it showed. And then all of that coupled with an overarching umbrella of Anthony Brown decision-making in concert with some, they abandoned the run a little bit too early to me, because I actually did think the offensive line got a push. Utah's game plan with bringing linebackers, I was talking to our friend Jeff Schwartz, over the top, right? They were pushing things to the outside where the linebackers were waiting. But the offensive line itself was able to dig in and get push along the trenches against the Utah defensive line. Just the running game plan was not there.
No.
The passing game plan was actually there. But if you have to throw the ball 35 times with Anthony Brown, it's either a nightmare or he's surprisingly excellent.
Yeah.
And probably this, nothing in between.
This was the full Anthony Brown experience.
Correct.
Last night.
Yeah. So he had a couple of passes. You had a deep touchdown pass, had an amazing pass on a line to Chris Hudson, who was one of the receivers who stepped in, a younger receiver, downfield for like 50 yards. He had dimes, but then he would be late or he would be behind. He would throw the ball too high for short receivers, throw the ball too low for tall receivers. He would miss easy crossing patterns. He would abandon the pocket too early. He would stay in the pocket too long. It was just who Anthony Brown is, for better or for worse. And he's been at times incredible for Oregon. He made plays with his legs. But the fact remains, Utah had the better game plan. Utah was able to weather good Oregon plays and stay on the field and do what good teams do, which was completely stomp a flawed team at a tough road environment. And Oregon is so crazy beat up. It's hard to say, like, oh, if they had this receiver, they would have done something different. There probably isn't a group of players who, if they were playing for Oregon, would have made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Given the mistakes on both sides of the ball, the penalties, the untimely penalties, driving deep into Utah territory and then a holding call on 3rd and 3, sending it back, however many yards. It was mistake after mistake. And we've talked about this in teams playing against Ohio State, teams playing against Alabama, teams playing against whoever. And I'm not saying Utah's on that level, but that's a tough spot. And in tough spots against good teams, you have to be buttoned up. And yeah, Oregon was far from it.
I compared this to you when we chatted this morning a little bit, yeah, like going to a party with a bunch of little kids and you just sort of end up shell-shocked. That was Oregon in this game. They just, I don't know if it was the intensity. I don't know if it was falling behind early, if that nuked the game plan or what, but there was a lot that felt like it came off the swivel pretty quickly for the Ducks. And look, score is 38-7. The proof is in the pudding. The number 3 team in the latest batch of college football playoff rankings goes down. It's a big deal for Utah. Utah clinches the Pac-12 South. It's been a hell of a year for them. Highs and lows, to say the least. And so you feel good for Kyle Whittingham getting this W. We will, again, see bonus football from the Utes as they will play in that Pac-12 title game. Remains a little unclear who they will play in that game. Just about everybody still has a shot from the Pac-12 North, but
Wazoo can get in, Oregon State can get in, and Oregon.
Crazy.
Oregon with a win is in, I believe, right?
Yeah,
if Oregon
wins
their rivalry game against Oregon State. And by the way, being sent cut-ups and coaches' angle clips this morning made me feel even worse. Because sometimes you can see those angles and be like, oh man, Utah rotated safeties really well. There was nothing there. There was a lot.
There was a lot there.
There was a lot there. So
all right,
what are you gonna do?
38-7, big win for Utah. Let's talk about Alabama. Let's talk about that game.
Yeah.
Alabama was number 2, still is number 2, will remain number 2. Presumably, I guess that's not a given with what Ohio State did to Michigan State, but for the moment,
sure.
Number 2, Alabama, 42, Arkansas, 35. A ton of offense in this game, man. Almost 700 yards for Alabama, 468 for Arkansas. Bryce Young in this game set an Alabama record with 559 yards passing and 5 touchdowns. This one was closer early and then got close late. It did feel as if Bama was going to run away with it, but Arkansas inched their way back into it. And they scored with about a minute left. They had a run at an onside kick that took a bounce, but was just kicked a little too hard. And that was essentially what salted the game away for the Crimson Tide. My two main thoughts here, I'll start with Arkansas, because Arkansas played a hell of a game. KJ Jefferson and the Hogs just in general are an incredible story. Traylon Burks. KJ looks so good in this game, even with the loss. Like, who cares? Again, it is a matter of expectations. The expectations preseason for Arkansas were not that they were going to be an 8-win team. And yet here we are. This has been a really good season.
Not that they'd have a minute left in a game against Alabama in a spot to make noise. Yeah.
And it not feel like a fluke either.
Right.
It didn't feel like a fluke. I watched the game. It's just they played hard. They didn't give up. And so I think as if you're a Hogs fan, look, this season has been nothing but gravy. Good on Sam Pittman, good on the Hogs. They definitely took it to Bama as best they could. If you're a Bama fan, I hate to keep saying this, Bama's vulnerable. If you play a team with an offense, if you play a team with a defense, if you play a team that's not going to quit,
right,
Bama's vulnerable. That's not every team in the country. It takes a special team, but for sure, up against Georgia in 2 weeks in the SEC title game, Bama probably feels as vulnerable going into that game as they have at any point in the Nick Saban era.
Yeah, I think that all those points are correct. It's not fun to compliment and be wowed by Alabama's quarterback. We've been doing that the past few years, be it with Tua, be it with Mac Jones or whatever. Bryce Young, man. Bryce Young.
I told you in week one, and I didn't tell you anything you didn't know.
Right.
This is not me, the wise football prophet or anything.
Yeah.
But I remember I was not familiar with Bryce Young. I was familiar with the name from recruiting, from NIL, from all the preseason coverage that we did. But I hadn't seen a whole lot of game film of him. I remember watching the first 5 minutes of Bryce Young back in week one or week two, whenever it was. Miami. It was the Miami game.
Yeah.
And I texted you immediately and said, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be a problem. He is going to be a real problem for teams.
Yeah. And this is year one. 1,000%, by the way, we're going to get a quote from Bryce Young. I didn't really know what I was doing fully last year. I just went out there and made plays. And now I really have a great command of the offense.
Yeah.
1,000% we're getting that quote. And I'm sure we got some version of it last year, too. Like, the progression is going to be very, very real, especially if Bill O'Brien sticks around another year. He's incredible. Obviously, that offense is incredible. They're a different team when they're able to run the ball, which they were able to do. Arkansas dropped into big, you know, dropping eight guys or whatever, and Bryce Young was able to pick them apart on different levels to different receivers. And survived the mistakes, obviously giving up that fake field goal touchdown. An incredible play from Arkansas that LSU had run a little while ago.
Yeah, you know, it's been a good year for the jump pass.
It has been a very good... By the way, that catch, though, from the Arkansas dude, he had to reach behind him with one arm. That was not an easy, like, walk-in touchdown. He made a play. And so Arkansas, especially through the air, they were crazy impressive. Alabama's a little bit more vulnerable than I'm sure Tide fans would like, especially in the back end. Will Anderson anchoring everything up front. I mean, DJ Dale was out in that game, but Will Anderson was still able to eat. And so Alabama's a team who can win in a number of ways, and you can also see how they can lose. And that's at least different, but, you know, win your pseudo clunkers and throwing for 500 plus yards with a first year starting quarterback. That's a fun way
to do
it, I guess.
That. You will take that. There are a bunch of teams around college football that would happily take that. Yeah. Alabama wins 42-35 over Arkansas. They've got the Iron Bowl next week. We will see what the, I guess, version of Auburn looks like with TJ Finley. They lost this week to South Carolina. That does not portend to great success against Alabama this coming week. But rivalry game, you do throw the records out. So we'll talk about that when we do the preview show.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, does seem as if it is Alabama, Georgia on a collision course for that SEC title game first weekend of December.
Yep.
More to come.
Yep.
On to the Big Ten, Dan.
Guess who just got murdered?
Ohio State scored a touchdown on all seven of their first half drives. Poor Herbie and Fowler were doing a variety show basically the entire second half of this football game, which just never materialized into any kind of matchup.
I thought Herb Street's MeUndies ad in the third quarter was just choice. He did a great job.
Ohio State 56, Michigan State 7. Just no answer. No answer whatsoever for the Buckeyes on offense, mainly through the air. C.J. Stroud, 6 touchdowns. We had a big game for Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson and JSN, Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Earth, Wind, and Fire, according to game day. Yeah.
Yeah, those guys had 5 total touchdowns. We posted something on our Twitter, the article that Travis wrote earlier in the week, Sneaky Stats, and he was, I forget the exact stat, but he was calling out Michigan State's pass defense as being, you know, kind of bad, kind of not so good. And we had some Michigan State folks react with, whoa, well, hold on, you know, you need the proper
give me content. Yards per attempt. Give me, they're trying to keep everything in front.
It's not fair to show this kind of disrespect to us. Ohio State did not get that message. They showed every bit of disrespect to Michigan State, in effect, knocking them out of the top 10 here. I would imagine to some extent altering the perception of what Michigan State has done this year, rightly or wrongly. They basically took Kenny Walker III out of the game. That's what they did. By scoring all those touchdowns as quickly as they did in the first half, they took him out of the game. It went up 21-0 so quickly that it was really on Peyton Thorne's arm to try and bring him back into this thing. And if you've got a game plan that ends up with Peyton Thorne throwing the football 36 times, I think we can kind of imagine how that's going to go for the Spartans. Sure. And it did.
Yeah.
They end up losing very handily here to Ohio State, just completely outclassed by the Buckeyes.
Yeah. And look, I think Ohio State is, they're getting closer to being Oregon level. They are getting closer. They are getting there. Say what you will. But I could see them giving Oregon an even closer game, if not beating Oregon. Maybe. They're getting to that level. So, no. Who got loose for Ohio State in that first half?
Everybody. Everybody.
Of course. It was ugly. Ohio State's playing to its potential. Fair to say CJ Stroud's shoulder. Probably feeling pretty good. Feeling loose. Getting the resistance band action going.
Yep.
Because the balls that he was throwing, the confidence with which he was throwing down the field, the defense stepping up, tackling in the open field like they were able to tackle. This is an Ohio State team that has completely upgraded itself since early on this season. And it's a joy to see, as somebody who does not have to root for a team playing against Ohio State, although I married into a Michigan family, so that could be weird next week.
Fun but week coming.
I'm personally not invested. Yeah. Ohio State's a terrific, great team that nobody wants any part of right now. And I'm sure Georgia would happily say otherwise, but it won't be pleasant if Georgia gets Ohio State and is able to beat them. It most certainly won't be. So, yeah, Michigan State is, again, it's a team that has had a very good season that is flawed. And I believe if Mel Tucker is back and given 2, 3, 4, 5, however many years, the team is going to be deeper. It's going to be better defensively. It's going to have higher level players. And even with yesterday's final score and especially that first half, future's still looking bright to me if you're a Spartan fan.
Oh, yeah. You have to feel good about that. Okay.
Yeah.
Big win for Ohio State, though. A statement victory, to say the least. Let's stay in the great state of Ohio and talk about the Cincinnati Bearcats, Dan. Also,
guess who just got murdered?
What's fair is fair. We got to play it. Cincinnati wins 48-14. This was also a runaway train game. Cincy scored touchdowns on 4 of their first 5 drives and jumped out to a quick 27-0 lead. Early in the fourth, they had extended this to 48-0. SMU's defense, which had been pretty decent, had no answer whatsoever for Des Ritter or the Cincy ground game. Cincy ground game went for 250.
Yeah.
In this one, Dan. Just minimal resistance, to say the absolute bare minimum. Tanner Mordecai, who had been second in the nation in touchdown passes, 7th in the nation in passing yards, was held to 66 yards in this game.
Not enough.
Not enough.
I'll say it.
Not enough. So look, all the hand wringing out there.
I want your emotional reaction now. You got my emotional reaction as somebody with the stones, with the cojones, to take the points in both the Michigan State situation and the SMU situation. How do you feel?
I feel like I was wrong.
Yeah.
I feel like I was dead wrong. I feel like I picked the wrong game. I should have taken the points in the Arkansas game instead. But anybody who looks at the advanced numbers the way we look at the advanced numbers.
Yeah.
You would look at SMU on paper. You'd look at Cincinnati on paper. And you would say 12 points is too much. 11 points is too much. This should not be double digits. This could be a very close game. It was not. It was not. Cincinnati way outclassed SMU in this football game. It was just not a contest. And I'm watching the scoreboard. I'm seeing, all right, 21-27. SMU's got an offense. They're going to come back. They're going to find a... They never came back. Cincinnati did the opposite of what they've been doing for a good chunk of the year. And instead of taking 3.5 quarters to really get themselves in order and up to speed and to optimal levels of offense. Nope, must have done that in the build-up to this game because they came out firing and they were all over SMU from the jump. So good on them. Good on them. They picked a very opportunistic week to do that with Oregon losing. I don't know how the committee can look at Cincinnati in the wake of this week and say, nah, we got to leave them out.
Well, okay, so SMU hadn't really beaten anybody, all due respect to TCU, and I'm not trying to revise history or anything. SMU has been a good story, and they've won the games comfortably against not-so-good teams. But if Cincinnati, if we're going to talk big picture momentarily, because we've got a lot to get to, right? If Cincinnati beats Tulane more impressively, if Cincinnati beats Tulsa more impressively, or Navy, pick one of those, that they win that game 41-13 or something like that. Does that change anything for you? They're still an undefeated team.
Right.
So it's the only thing that's going to change a non-Cincinnati believer is if they're winning every game 51-3. Because, yes, they beat up on SMU, but it's an unranked SMU team who hadn't really beaten anybody. So I'm not sure what actually changes in the people that were skeptical of Cincinnati.
But here's the rub if you're Cincinnati. You're a group of five team.
Yeah.
And I think what's been very evident from the first two, three batches of playoff rankings now is the committee doesn't want to put them in. They're a group of five team.
Of course not.
They don't want to do it. And so what changed? If you're Cincinnati, what you can hope to change is the narrative. You need to try and change the perception. Perception is reality here. And so, no, nothing changed. They've been good all year. But to go out to demolish SMU the way they did in a big national spot that I think a lot of people knew about, they will have another opportunity against Houston. They did clinch, finally, their spot in the American Championship game now. But this is what they got to do. On a national stage, they got to go out there and they got to blow the doors off teams that are at least talked about as being respectable, as they did with SMU. So good on them. They did everything they needed to do in this game, I think, to now officially be entrenched in that top four. I hope that they are.
I just think it's a carrot blowing teams out at this point with how they've been ranked as an undefeated team. Like, is there a score that they can beat Houston by? If they beat Houston in that old, like, who was it, UCLA in Texas, 66-3,
yeah,
like a respected, like, what is it? I don't think that's going to exist because they've already beaten a top 10 team by 11 points on the road. And that's their only resume point at the end of the day if they're going to be compared to a one-loss Notre Dame team.
And the truth is this, because of the matchups that are still on the schedule the last 2 weeks of the year,
mm-hmm,
as long as Cincinnati wins out, they're in. There's not really
disagree.
There's not really a feasibility behind putting anybody else in over them.
Oklahoma?
You're going to put Oklahoma in over Cincinnati?
Sure. I'm not, but do you think that's feasible? Of course it is. A one-loss Power 5 champion over an undefeated G5 team that the committee can claim, well, they weren't as
Isn't Oklahoma like 13th?
Okay, but how many there's three teams that just lost. What's Oklahoma State? Like, what? I don't know. I think we're still due for a little bit of chaos. Michigan?
I just don't see it. I don't see how at the straight face Gary Barta can go up there and say Cincinnati's not one of the top four teams with the way things are going. Or certainly at the end of the year, because you're going to have a loser between Georgia and Alabama. Michigan's probably going to get booted out this coming week. Final score here was 48-14 in favor of the Bearcats.
They were crazy good. Desmond Ridder was very good. I think that was probably too much NFL draft talk. Like, you can see why he's being done. Okay, relax. He's just a good player that we can just talk about and enjoy his season and his game against SMU. They ran the ball well. The receivers came to play, and that defense completely hounded the SMU offensive line. And so, yeah, whether it was, you know, Bill Connelly talked about, you know, are they just bored the midway point through the season and just trying to peak at the right time? Maybe. But they certainly did against SMU, who is perceived to be, what, the second toughest team on their regular season schedule? So,
no, it's true.
That's good.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, moving on, let's go over to the Big 12. Speaking of Oklahoma, Oklahoma wins 28-21.
Yeah.
Over Iowa State. I think I was 0-3 on my locks this week, which is not a good look for me.
It happens.
It does happen to the best.
A sad slice Saturday all around.
The game here was a typical Iowa State game in 2021. I have been following this team very closely. I have been in on Iowa State, and then I wasn't, and then I was again, and it's been a roller coaster. They played well enough to win. But again, it's just a few plays. It's a few mistakes. Sure. It's a few things here and there that lead to their undoing. If I told you this past Wednesday that Oklahoma would finish with 96 yards passing, would you have thought that Iowa State won the game?
Yeah, definitely.
They also held the Sooners to 1 out of 10 on third downs. They had 17 more minutes of possession. There was a lot of good in this performance for Iowa State, but again, it was just a few moments.
I mean, is Iowa State is just the rich man's Nebraska at this point, right?
Yeah, they kind of are. They held Caleb Williams down. He didn't look good. He did have a nice touchdown run very early.
Like great. First and a possession. Great touchdown pass as well.
And a great touchdown pass. But he didn't look good for the overwhelming majority of the game.
Right.
The big moment in this one was a key play. A key play at the end of the first half, a 42-yard scoop and score. Oklahoma makes a nice play on Brock Purdy. They jar the ball loose. It pops out. A guy picks it up, runs 42 yards for the touchdown. And that kind of swung things in favor of Oklahoma. But by and large, beyond that, it was kind of an even matchup here. Iowa State did a lot right. Oklahoma held on. They made the big plays when they had to. And they get the dub here. This is a big win for Oklahoma. It doesn't always have to look super pretty. I wouldn't say it was a clunker, but they were in.
Oh, I would.
You think this was a clunker?
Oh, I would. You go 1 of 10 on third downs and you have no passing game and you're Oklahoma with a 5-star freshman QB and Marvin Mims and all those. Like, yeah, that's a clunker.
Maybe it was a clunker.
They won it.
Maybe it was a clunker. Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah. And what, by the way, they scored 21 offensive points because it was the crazy fumble scoop and score right in front of halftime. 21 offensive points with the type of talent Oklahoma has. I hear you. Iowa State plays good defense. They definitely do. That's still a bit of a clunker.
Maybe it was a bit of a clunker. Okay,
at home?
I'll give you that. That's fine.
But good for Oklahoma. By the way, though, if the Sooners lose next week in Bedlam and Baylor wins, I believe Baylor goes to the, because Baylor will have the tiebreaker against Oklahoma. Baylor will go to the Big 12 championship game.
Yep.
Okay.
Anything further to add on this game, Dan?
Not especially. It was a mistake-prone Iowa State offense. They brought in, Brock Purdy gets benched. And Johnny Heckers, is it Johnny Heckers?
Hunter Deckers, you were close.
Hunter Deckers. I'm thinking of Johnny Deckers or something like that, the punter. Hunter Deckers throws an arm punt enthusiast's
an
arm
immediate
punt.
Arm punt.
Yeah. The Iowa State offense is underwhelming. Yeah. Let's call it that, because Iowa State's defense gives them a chance basically every week, and the offense is just too inconsistent. And I don't know. Good for Oklahoma. It was definitely a clunker.
Speaking of defenses giving you a chance, let's talk about Oklahoma State.
Let's.
23-0, they blank Texas Tech. They go on the road. They cover the point spread, which was about 10. They held Tech to 109 yards of offense in this shutout. What kept dawning on me as I was watching the scoreboard, as I was reading commentary in the postgame here, is that Oklahoma State has emerged as the unsung alternative to Notre Dame in the playoff. Have you noticed that? It's starting to happen.
Yeah.
They're like the stevia of this playoff conversation, Dan.
The agave.
They're just there. They're hanging out. As you pointed out, if Oklahoma State wins next week in the Bedlam game against Oklahoma, they're going to get Baylor, probably get Baylor, assuming Baylor wins in the Big 12 title game. They'll be out of the playoff hunt, but it'll be a rematch against Oklahoma if they end up losing. So,
right.
Either way, a lot to play for if you are Oklahoma State. The defense travels every week. The defense plays well. I think in this coming week against Oklahoma, it will be a matter of what do they get out of their offense. We know that the defense is going to keep things in check. It will keep them in this game. I don't think there's really any risk of them getting blown out by an Oklahoma offense that can be very good. Hasn't been good against really good defenses.
Right.
What can they get out of Spencer Sanders? What can they get out of their own ground game? These are the types of questions that we're going to ask on the preview show when we drop that on Wednesday. But Bedlam game for sure has serious national, serious Big 12 implications, as it always does.
Yeah, it wasn't an exceptional game for Oklahoma State's offense. But you sort of underscored Oklahoma State just, or undersold, Oklahoma State just shut out a team that has a heartbeat in November on the road in a weird place to play.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're looking predictive that like Oklahoma State's going to be that alternative to Notre Dame for playoff conversation. I cannot wait to see who the new LSU coach is and how much he offers Jim Knowles to run his defense, because Jim Knowles is about to get paid, maybe by Oklahoma State, but by somebody, because holy moly, that defense is otherworldly. And otherworldly with not top-end talent, just in terms of recruiting on every level. They just come to play, and they are so disciplined and good at playing college football. Good for the Pokes. What's turning into a special year could be even more special if that offense is able to find a few more sparks.
All right. Elsewhere in the Big 12, we had Baylor by 10 over K-State in the weird point spread game.
Mm-hmm.
We had TCU by 3 over Kansas, and we had West Virginia 31, Texas 23, Dan. You want to comment on any of those matchups?
Yeah, so Baylor's quarterback, Gary Bohannon, goes down with a hamstring injury off of an impressive scramble, like an 11-yard run or something like that, and he's holding his hamstring while leaving the field, right? Like, while during, and like, you can feel it in your own personal hamstring, what that must have felt like. I don't know if it was I haven't seen an update, if it was a torn hamstring or a pulled hamstring or just a really bad cramp or something, but there is something going on there, because it was what's his last name?
Shapen, as Bradley pointed out in our Slack.
Yeah.
Shapen, but not Stirred, the freshman.
Okay. Shaping up to be a decent backup.
Yeah.
He was relatively efficient, and I thought the actual story here was Baylor's defense against an experienced quarterback on the road, and Deuce Vaughn got loose for a long run, but otherwise at least kept everything in front of them, made plays, tackled well in the open field. That's a tough spot, especially given a backup quarterback coming in. And Baylor's defense really stepped up, as good defenses do. So really impressive win. TCU almost lost to Kansas.
Kansas is playing, man.
But didn't.
They're playing,
but didn't. Good for TCU, I suppose. Max Duggan back in there. And West Virginia beat Texas, and Texas started the game off in incredibly sloppy fashion. I know Casey Thompson's beat up, had some drops. The play calling was off. Texas starts the game with 4 straight 3-and-outs.
Yep.
Eventually, Roschon Johnson makes a bunch of plays for them because Bijan Robinson's out for the season. But Texas, just too many stretches of incompetence. And West Virginia, slowly but surely, I saw Jared Dagey announced he's coming back next year. they can capitalize. That's who West Virginia is right now, which I think is an important step. When a team is clearly down or clearly flawed, especially at home, especially in Morgantown, West Virginia can take advantage. They can make plays. They can show some balance. And I know Neil Brown is criticized, and rightfully so on certain levels, by Mountaineer fans. But West Virginia, very quietly, they can get to a bowl game next week after a really ugly start to the year. Good win. Good win for the Ears.
Yep. Texas right now, along with Florida, they are packing it in, my friend.
Yeah. 1-2-3 Cancun.
Texas has lost, what, 6 in a row. They've got K-State next week, which is a team, frankly, built to exploit everything they do poorly.
Well, historically, Kansas State just owns Texas. Texas is on a tour of confidence building for other teams.
It is unbelievable. Speaking of which, let's go over to the SEC. I joked this morning with you, what would happen if we put Florida and Texas in a bowl game? Just like their own thing.
There has to be some sort of prize. A sad prize. By the way, just because we named it Sad Slice Saturday, I did not want to let it be unsaid. There was a sad grouping of meals for Michigan State players coming off the field in this matchup as a weird poetic thing. Did you see what it was?
I didn't.
I saw about 100 bags of Canes. So it was a solid strip Saturday for the Spartans. That's as best as that's best I can do. But yes, to move on to the SEC, Florida, Texas, in what I'm calling the Incapable, I'm all in.
So we've got some breaking news. In an absolutely crazy turn of events, from earlier this year, Florida has made it official. They have now fired Dan Mullen.
Everything Ed Orgeron touches turns, I don't know. Man, it's surprising. This is year four, so this isn't Jimmy Lake, you know, almost getting 2 years. 4 years is not a crazy amount of time to give somebody, but the crazy thing to me is, and when you dig in, it's not as crazy, he exclusively made New Year's Six games. He won the East just last year, and then a Peach Bowl. Last year was the Sugar Bowl and a very comfortable loss to Oklahoma. You know, Kyle Trask is only in there for a little bit. But and the Orange Bowl went over Virginia the prior year. It underscores and sort of highlights and points arrows at the fact that inside, despite the fact that Florida had been successful, relatively speaking, to the rest of the sport, that things were beginning to rot a little in the program. We saw reporting that effort hasn't been there and recruiting has fallen off a cliff. And so from a certain perspective, if you're not recruiting, if the locker room is kind of gone and the effort clearly is waning on the field, and we saw what happened against Samford, we saw the points explosion, especially on the ground against LSU and just, you know, South Carolina, the overtime loss to Mizzou. Like, this is a team that is careening in the wrong direction, that there was little faith in the athletic department, in the administration, and I'm sure among boosters and influential types around the program, that he could get it turned around. And so they felt like, this isn't going to happen. We're just going to waste time by continuing to employ Dan Mullen and further distance ourselves from essentially Georgia at this point, right?
Oh, for sure. And here's the thing with Florida, Dan. There is no obvious fit for this opening, right?
Yeah.
When Dan Mullen was hired 4 years ago, he was the guy. He was the throwback to everything that made Florida so great under Urban Meyer. You don't have that now. You've got a lot of interesting names. You've got Billy Napier and Bob Stoops and Mark Stoops and Lane Kiffin and Dave Clawson and Dave Aranda and Luke Fickell and Matt Campbell. I could go on and on and on. These are all quality candidates.
Yeah.
I don't think any of them seem like an obvious fit at Florida. I still think it's one of the premier jobs in all of college football.
I hear you.
But as for who of those names is the obvious fit to lead the Gators into this next chapter, honestly, I don't think I could tell you.
The only thing is, 2018, both Scott Frost and Chip Kelly, I'm not going to say they were offered the job, because nobody gets offered the job unless they know, unless the administrator knows it's going to be accepted. But there were conversations that Chip Kelly had, or Chip Kelly's people had, with Florida's people. Interest was gauged. Same goes for Scott Frost. They chose UCLA and Nebraska as better fits for themselves. And I don't know how telling that is to you, but it doesn't feel like it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer for the right fit, but I don't think the biggest names necessarily see themselves in Gainesville. It's just a very tough but high upside job to me.
Well, look, we'll do our best to keep you up to date as the coaching carousel continues to spin ever so chaotically. Count them, 7 Power 5 openings at time of recording. But all that being said, I don't want it to overshadow what Mizzou did. All due credit to Mizzou here, Dan, for getting this win. Mizzou's bowl eligible now. They got Arkansas next week. They could end up 7-5. I don't think they will. But either way, given the way they started, it's been a rough year for Eli Drinkwitz. He celebrated by bringing out the lightsaber. I don't know if you saw that in the press conference afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this was the game last year where Dan Mullen, I think they played it on Halloween. Dan Mullen came to his presser dressed as Darth Vader, which is a weird Dan Mullen thing to do. Eli Drinkwitz brought out the lightsaber. He was happy. They won. They got bowl eligible. Good on them. Great game for Tyler Beatty. Leads the SEC in rushing. Has over 1,300 yards. He's been very, very good this year. Pretty much their best player. But this one went to overtime. Connor Bazelak throws like a fadeaway touchdown to put this one
going
on
for two.
Ice.
Yeah.
Yep. Going for two. And Florida loses.
Yeah, a very nice win for Mizzou as they get bowl eligible. And yeah, you're right. A really disappointing season in terms of growth, but they've been recruiting well. And I don't know what that's going to turn out to be for the Tigers, but beating a down Florida team and getting that win at home in this spot, quite impressive to take advantage.
South Carolina 21, Auburn 17. We had Ole Miss.
Speaking of which.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we'll come back to that.
Yeah,
Ole Miss by 14 over Vandy. Tennessee wins big over South Alabama. Georgia big over Charleston Southern. A&M big over Prairie View. Mississippi State big over Tennessee State. Kentucky big over New Mexico State. We also had LSU by 2 scores over Louisiana Monroe. Dan, thoughts on the SEC at large?
None on any of those games. I mean, Ole Miss did win a conference game, but I don't have thoughts on the Ole Miss game. They play well enough. South Carolina showing increased competence. And we've talked about this before, that it's always strange in those first years for coaches. And there's a belief there, and that South Carolina's playing hard. We believe the talent level is going to come up, but especially up front, especially running the ball, South Carolina taking steps forward. Auburn in a tough spot without Bo Nix, but Tank Bigsby. I thought they went away from him a little too much. I was watching this game kind of quickly this morning. He ran wild on this South Carolina team. How do you lose a game where Tank Bigsby runs like that? I know there were mistakes and the defense kind of faded at times, but what did he end up with?
164 on 22 carries. He had a really good game. The popular talking point here is going to be that Auburn blew another lead and had a ton of chances to win this game, and they still ended up losing despite Tank Bigsby having the kind of day that he'd had.
Yeah.
Can we talk for a second, though, about South Carolina and how wild it is that they are bowl eligible? Because it's on the same level as Arkansas. We had a very similar conversation.
I think South Carolina has not been as impressive as Arkansas.
No, they haven't. They haven't. But it's on the same level to an extent because they had the new coach. They were totally rebuilding. At one point, they're starting a GA at quarterback. And their schedule was brutal. At least it looked brutal to start the season. So to get to 6 wins at all, to be starting Jason Brown, a kid you brought down from a D3 school in PA, St. Francis?
Yep.
I'm sorry, that's a hell of a story. So if you're a South Carolina fan, if you're watching Shane Beamer's progress, the way that this team has played, I think you put it rather aptly here. They have shown increasing competence week in and week out, and they are playing hard. So
yeah, South Carolina driving to the finish line in the Tommy Boy car with chicken wire and duct tape, the hood's flying off,
and the deer
pulling
in the back.
In quarterbacks.
Yep.
But yeah, there's a deer in the back, but the Tommy Boy car has gotten them to a bowl game. Look, their non-conference schedule was nothing. Look, but get to a bowl, finish out strong, get those extra practices, get those younger guys reps in practice. It's awesome.
The Tommy Boy car. I like that.
Yeah.
Right. Let's move on.
It's on Netflix. I watched it the other day at 6:14 a.m.
It doesn't really hold up, but it sort of holds up.
It kind of does. There are definitely moments that don't, but fat guy in a little coat still makes me giggle, and I apologize for nothing.
Over in the ACC, we had Georgia Tech getting blanked on the road 55-0 against Notre Dame. We had Brennan Armstrong in yet another losing effort. 487-3 touchdowns as Virginia loses by 10 to Pitt. We had NC State big over Syracuse 41-17. Miami by 12 over Virginia Tech 38-26. Big game for TVD. We had Clemson knocking off the number 10 team in the country 48-27 as they take it to Wake. Florida State going on the road, hanging on for dear life and getting the W.
They did.
26-23 over BC. Another lock gone awry for this one. Louisville wins by 40 over Duke and North Carolina by 20 over Wofford. Let's start with Clemson, Dan.
Let's.
Clemson took control of this one in the third quarter. They outscored Wake 21-3 and then held on for the W. This is a big win for Clemson on the ground, 333 yards, four touchdowns, led by Kobe Pace and Will Shipley. Clemson, all of a sudden, left for dead like the good guy in a superhero movie who they think they kill, but they can't find the body.
Yeah.
Clemson now, with a bowl win, because it will be in a bowl, could get to 10 wins. Clemson, oh, by the way, could still win the ACC, Dan.
Well, they've got a Tommy Boy car heading their direction at 75 miles an hour. Yeah, they are in it. They need help. They need Wake and NC State to lose for Clemson to end up winning the Atlantic to take on Pitt, who we'll get to momentarily, in the ACC championship game. What's more likely is that Wake Forest beats Boston College and gets in. But who knows? NC State can get in. Like, it's a pretty, because NC State needs... What is the help they need? They need to beat North Carolina. I don't know. There's a whole three-way situation. But any of those three teams, I believe, can end up in the championship game. So it'll be an exciting final week there. And as it relates to the game itself, Wake is that defensive chiropractor, right? You talk about neck crack games. That defense, they're working on your spine. They're working on your legs. You got the kinks to work out on offense. Wake is there to help you out. And it was a lot of it coming on the ground, but DJU made more plays than usual. I think it was Bo Collins who stepped up in Justin Ross's absence. He was out for this game. They were down a couple receivers, and Clemson was able to get it done on defense. Like, I think we presumed they would, but especially on offense to get things going. It's taken a while, but, and it took the Wake defense. All the same, impressive that they still are in it for the division. And if they're able to win the ACC, we could potentially see them in a New Year's Six game against Alabama.
Crazy.
As weird as that sounds.
What a parallel universe we're living
in.
What
a sport. Yep.
Yeah. Notre Dame ran roughshod over Georgia Tech. This was like, this was a Georgia box score is what this was. This was a participation trophy for everybody on Notre Dame who plays offense because they all got a line in the box score. It was 45-0 at half. And they killed Tech. They just killed him. It was a runaway train again. Here is the deal with Notre Dame.
Okay.
I hate to oversimplify this, but this is where we stand here.
Okay.
Oregon and Michigan State lost, which means Notre Dame's going to move up, I would assume, two spots to number six. Somebody's got to lose next week between Ohio State and Michigan, which is going to kick somebody else out. And then they're going to move up to five. And then there's Alabama, Ohio State, and Cincinnati all in conference championship games in week 14. If one of those teams loses, chances are pretty good that Notre Dame is your number four seed in the playoff.
Is that a threat?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Oklahoma State, depending on what they do, could find their way to elbow in. If they beat Oklahoma, if they win in the Big 12 title game over Baylor, that's a pretty good way to close out the season. You could definitely make a case for the Cowboys, but that's just where we're at. Where we're at, I think, at this point, is that your fourth team is probably going to be either Notre Dame or Oklahoma State, barring a weird situation in the SEC title game where Alabama knocks off Georgia, and then we talk about should there be two teams from the SEC in the playoff.
Wait, how would you keep either one of those teams out if Alabama beats Georgia?
I don't think you would. But I think that's the only circumstance in which we'd be talking about Notre Dame and or Oklahoma State being left out.
I don't. Okay, we can get into playoff talk another time. Just in terms of the machinations and whatever. Machinations. Tell me about Notre Dame. Georgia Tech, not good. Started Jordan Yates at quarterback. Jeff Sims, it's a foot thing, I think. And Notre Dame, from the onset, did what we think is a really good team should do. They threw like crazy.
They threw like crazy. Tech. Jack Cohn looked good. Jack Cohn, with time, can be quite good.
Yeah, Michael Mayer got loose, I saw, for a really long touchdown. Yep. They were up. What was the score at the end of the first quarter? Was it 21-0, something like that?
I mean, they just killed it. It was 45-0 at half. I forget what it was after one quarter. But they did exactly what they were supposed to do. Brian Kelly talked about style points when they asked him, you know, is this something that you cared about? He said, yeah, it is something we cared about because we're trying to get in the playoff.
Yeah.
And they won by 55. So that was a good showing for Notre Dame. They've got Stanford next week, who... we could talk about Stanford here in a little bit, what happened to them against Cal in the big game. But you have to feel pretty good about Notre Dame's chances of finishing 11-1. It's a good year. Whether they make the playoff or not, that's sort of a separate sidebar discussion. 11-1 is a good year, and their only loss was to a top five team.
And they'll end up in whatever, the whatever bowl game, whatever New Year's Six game is not a playoff game. They'll end up in the Cotton Bowl. They'll end up in whatever, the
Peach
Bowl.
Either way, they're going to be fine. Pitt won by 10. It was a back-and-forth game. They went ahead by 10 about midway through the fourth quarter. That gave them enough leeway here to knock off Virginia. But a good game for Kenny Pickett. Four touchdowns and two picks. I'm sure that he'd want back. But otherwise, big game for Jordan Addison.
Oh,
14 for 202 and four touchdowns in this game. Just a mammoth effort from him. Devin Leary, his fifth straight game for NC State, going over 300 yards, completed 70% of his passes, which was his best against any Power 5 opponent dating back to the Virginia Tech game last year. He's been very, very solid for the Wolfpack. TVD, 357, three touchdowns, no picks. Miami was up big early in the second quarter, kept Tech at arm's length, even though the Hokies did pull within one score towards the end of the third quarter. The Florida State game, Florida State was up big. This is like my lock of the millennium. I was all in on BC here. And had it not been for the fact that Florida State was up 26-3 early in the third quarter, Boston College might have had enough juice to come back and win it.
Yep.
It was a valiant comeback for Phil Jurkovec and the Eagles, but ultimately, all due credit to the Noles for another nice win here. They need a win against Florida next week to get to bowl eligibility, which would be a hell of a story again for Mike
Norvell.
I wonder if they're going to get it. They were good on defense. They were very sound.
Florida State has been good on defense. That's the thing. Since that first game of the season, and I can pull up their entire schedule, but like they've had, look, they hold UMass to three. They hold Clemson to what, 23 or 24 points, but they score on the end on that crazy play. NC State, they keep under 30. That's a thing. NC State has a good offense. They keep North Carolina to 25 points. This is a full-on, above average Florida State defense. The job Mike Norvell has done in Tallahassee, it's quiet because of the way Florida State started the season. But especially given the recruiting trail, there's momentum. That's all I'm going to say. There's momentum to the Noles. Don't know what their ceiling appears to be because we don't know what they're going to look like long-term at quarterback. I think, did Chuba Purdy transfer? So I don't know what long-term they look like at quarterback. Hopefully it's promising, but there's an ascension happening, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Jordan Travis looked good. He looked really good. He impressed again.
Yeah.
251 through the air, three touchdowns, no interceptions. So good on him and good on the defense. They had Phil
Jurkovec.
He did
transfer, by the way.
Yeah.
Purdy entered the portal. Yeah.
They had Jurkovec running for his life pretty much the entire game.
TBD was great. Miami was very good up front in the little I saw of this game. Syracuse ran really well. Sean Tucker, a very quiet, interesting running back nationally. He goes for 8 yards a carry. He was good as Syracuse sort of changed what they do on offense. Garrett Trader just wasn't. And Virginia had shots in this game. Virginia got stops in the second half. They had the ability to capitalize on some stops, as bad as that defense has been. But Pitt's defense was able to step up as well. And Brandon Armstrong, extremely gutty with what he's been able to play through physically and succeed in the way he has. By the way, did you mention our guy Mikhail Malik at Louisville? Was it Thursday or Friday night?
I didn't mention him, but they won by 40.
500 total yards, air and ground. Yeah,
good for him. Oof.
I mean, it was Duke.
Over in the Pac-12, UCLA 62-33 over USC. Cal by 30 over Stanford. Colorado beats Washington. Wazoo over Arizona on Friday night. And then I guess the other big game in the Pac-12 was Oregon State knocking off Arizona State, Pac-12 after dark. We thought that ASU might run all over Oregon State. It turns out that Oregon State out-pizzaed the Hut, Dan, as they ran for 237.
Yeah.
And salted this one away. Yeah. Thoughts on the Pac-12?
Arizona State is bad. Arizona State is sloppy, and they were unable to run it against Oregon State, and they got their lone touchdown off of a turnover from a bad snap. It was like a 4 or 5 yard drive. Arizona State was bad on the road, Pac-12 after dark, as a road favorite. Oregon State came to play. Oregon State's defense had a good game plan, and they were able to move the ball, as you mentioned, especially on the ground. B.J. Baylor, another unsung, running back nationally, has had a really nice year. UCLA statement win. You saw DTR sign a ball and get, or sign a hat, I think, and get penalized for it after scoring a touchdown.
I saw that.
Big statement for UCLA. They were able to get it done both through the air and on the ground. They had a very nice day.
I saw this. They had 11 plays of 20 or more yards in this game, which is the most in the Chip Kelly era. So big play defense not playing in this game for USC.
No, and UCLA can very quietly get to 9 wins, which feels like a very Jim Morris season. Getting quietly to 9 wins while not really affecting anything big is kind of a big... I guess they affected LSU's coaching situation. Washington should have beaten Colorado. 3-yard line? 4-yard line? Have a bad snap that Colorado scoops and scores for 97 yards in a return touchdown?
Yep.
I know, it's an interim situation as well, but damn, that is a winnable game that Washington should have taken and could have gotten to a bowl and gotten to, 5-6 beating Colorado in Boulder? But alas, Wazoo, as you mentioned, very quietly. So they win Friday night against a reeling Arizona team. Let's be honest, it's going to take some time in Tucson. But Wazoo, they play hard. They don't have the dudes on defense especially, but that defense plays hard. They got it done. And with, you'll have to help me out here, because I believe if they win the Apple Cup and finish the season 7-5, is that true? Does that math align with what you're seeing?
Yes.
If Washington State wins the Apple Cup, they're currently 6-5, they'll go 7-5. But would get into the Pac-12 championship game over a 9-3 Oregon team if Oregon loses to Oregon State or something. There's like some possibility,
right,
that Wazoo gets into the Pac-12 championship game, which would be a crazy cool story, and nobody would watch. Nobody would watch a Pac-12 championship game with Oregon State or Wazoo playing against Utah. And that's okay. I'll watch. But man, is that a rough look for the conference?
Yeah. Cal won by 30 over Stanford. They had 352 rushing yards. It looks like Stanford's going to end up paying $3 million per win, which I think qualifies them for the SEC. And that's a separate sidebar altogether. But
you were a little confused heading into the season when we were doing over-under season win totals. You're like, Stanford's at 3.5?
Yeah.
That seems like an easy bet. And now it's down to the wire for Stanford. By the way, and the 3 include USC and Oregon. So, yeah, USC, Oregon, and Vandy. Stanford, yeah, you're right, about $3 million per win. And I don't think Stanford's going to do anything in terms of a coaching change. But I think a magnifying glass, at least on campus, is going to be looking through the paperwork to see what's what with the Stanford football program.
It's worth a podcast discussion. It's worth a discussion what they're paying.
I know.
A venerable human being. And David Shaw, whom we all love, and you know, I love his TED Talks. I think he's great. I think he's terrific.
After the specific Christian McCaffrey disposal of that Iowa carcass in the Rose Bowl, you're like, okay, I get it. If he's finding Christian McCaffrey, if he's finding these offensive linemen, if he's developing these NFL quarterbacks, if he's hiring these good coordinators. And then there was the weird thing where they get rid of their strength and conditioning coach a few years ago. I don't know what the record is since that happened, but woof, Stanford, jeez.
Yeah. All right. Over in the Big Ten, let's close it out, Dan.
Yes.
Michigan big over Maryland. The elite losers, I think you called.
That's what I call
the Terrapins.
Them. Yep. Nobody loses like Maryland loses.
59-18, 24-3 at halftime. Never really a doubt here. We had Penn State 28-0 over Rutgers. Penn State brought on their freshman Christian Veiu.
Veiu.
The pride of Ottawa, Canada. Granted, it was against Rutgers, but Sean Clifford could not continue on in this game. They bring in Veiu, and he looked pretty good. 235, three touchdowns. It was not a watchable first half. I don't know if you're prepared to do a drive chart reading here.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they got it together. They end up winning by 28, so nice win. Penn State D was very good.
Did Veiu look good to you? I didn't watch this game. Did Veiu look good to you? As soon as I saw people tweeting me the drive chart stuff.
No, he looked good. It took him a while to get going. But once he did, I thought looked pretty good.
It was Parker Washington who popped a little bit out wide?
Yep.
Okay.
We had Wisconsin 35-28 over Nebraska. Another one score game for Nebraska. No big deal. Everybody chill. Minnesota wins by three scores over Indiana as they score two touchdowns in the last 46 seconds of the first half to get it to 21-7. Then they added more padding along the way. We had Purdue by 18 over Northwestern as Aiden O'Connell goes
at Wrigley.
At Wrigley. We will talk about our Big Ten game of the week here momentarily, presented by DraftKings. We'll talk about that Illinois game. But any other thoughts on the Big Ten?
Yes. Christian Veiu, Canadian College Football Hall of Famer. Yes or no? Would have to supplant Jesse Palmer as the name that I'm trying to think of like the all-star Canadian college, like Oregon had a linebacker a few years ago, Bolo, and then we have Chuba Hubbard, who really popped a few years ago. I'm gonna have to think of the I want to say Oklahoma had a defensive lineman from Canada, a big dude. He popped and played well for them, but I'm gonna have to think about the best Canadian recent college football players. So hopefully that includes Christian Veiu, and he's the quarterback of the future for Penn State. We'll see. Sean Clifford started this game though, right?
Sean Clifford started this game. Veiu came in. Penn State is bringing in Drew Allaire next year, who presumably would be the quarterback of the future given his status on the recruiting trail, but Veiu looked pretty good. So what they do there and how that shakes out could be quite interesting.
I don't know who we should name this reference and attribute this reference to or this award to, but every week I really like saying stuff like, this guy was on your team this whole time? This guy was on the bench just hanging out? And Michigan had that, right? With the running back who's been playing in place of, it's Donovan Edwards?
Yep.
Donovan Edwards out of the backfield. He both carried the ball and was a receiving threat, I guess, speaking of like Christian McCaffrey types. Blake Corum obviously hurt, and this guy comes in and is electric. And we could say that about Andrell Anthony and what he was able to do against Michigan State in a losing effort. So, yeah, Maryland's bad. Maryland makes far too many mistakes. They shoot themselves in the foot. They turn the ball over. They're not very good at college football. And when I saw this spread, even I, who is often wrong, said to myself, what is the upper limit? What is the upper limit that this spread could be if it's 29.5 points? Because it was only in the teens, right? It was like 18.5 for Michigan on the 15 road.
15.5, yeah.
15.5. So that was a delicious, delicious take from myself. Elsewhere, before we get to the Big Ten game of the week, the DraftKings game of the week, Nebraska, Wisconsin. I don't know if you have any stray thoughts about that one, because that was a very strange rewatch for me because I kind of half watched it yesterday and more closely watched it.
I think
should also. OK, continue. We can talk about it now.
I think positive takeaways for both sides, or at least I will focus on the positive takeaways. If you're Nebraska, you lose another close one. But the offense looked pretty good, I guess, against an elite defense. And it was actually the best that anyone's looked all season against the Wisconsin defense. So, okay, that's something.
Yeah.
In terms of yards, anyway. And for Wisconsin, it's your seventh win in a row after that dreadful 1-3 start. It did take a while to settle in after that early identity crisis that they had, but the emergence of Braylon Allen, if nothing more, the emergence of him as the bell cow has been a complete revelation. He had 228 yards, three touchdowns in this one. And this is a good Nebraska defense. They just had no answer for him.
Agree. And he's young. He's
17
young
years
and
old.
Big. 17 and God, the future is bright. I don't know how Wisconsin keeps finding and developing these kids, but damn, is the future bright.
I just keep trying to imagine a 16-year-old version of Braylon Allen at my old high school.
Mm-hmm.
And what that would be like if high school kids that I watched play football would try to tackle him.
Sure. Same. This was before my high school started recruiting. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
The conversation around Nebraska is like, man, are they the best 3-8 team ever? My answer is no. They've earned that record. And then the conversation around Nebraska is like, man, they get in all these close games and just lose at the end, just can't pull it out. You can watch the entirety of Nebraska games and see why they are in that position. It's not just because they play pretty well and then screw it up at the end on their last possession. Adrian Martinez, if I'm going to talk about Maryland as an elite loser, he is an elite interception artist. These are not all tipped balls. These are not all like a route run incorrectly by a receiver, because he made plays throughout this game. But the 3-8 is, I mean, it's 3-8 abhorrent throws a game, right? 3-8, just awful decisions a game. And part of that's on the offense and the offensive design and the development and coaching and how he's prepared, whatever. But part of it is also there are just going to be snaps where he backpedals or runs backwards and throws off of his back foot into quadruple coverage. There is a hero ball mentality to Adrian Martinez at times where you're just like, that's going to cost him 14 points based on what they could have been doing on this drive and the run back or the new field position. And he had a couple of those throws that he was just trying to do too much. And if you go back and rewatch the plays and especially those replays, you're like, oh, there was a tight end wide open 10 yards in front of the guy he was throwing to. Like, I understand there are progressions, but there's a stubbornness to Scott Frost and this offense and a play design, especially in the red zone, in those high leverage moments that Nebraska screws up every week. And now that we look at what some of the transfer quarterbacks have done across the country, to stand pat with Adrian Martinez, I think at this point, you know, he gives you a ton of good, but he's taken away a bunch. And whether it's Hendon Hooker, whether it's our guy, you know, Bailey Zappi, whatever it is, there are always high floor guys available. And Nebraska sticking with this offense and the personnel, that's why they're 3-8.
Yeah,
it's not all Scott Frost, but a lot of it is.
Go get yourself
and that's
a Jack
the decision
Cone,
that
right?
gets them there. Get yourself a Jack. Look, across the sport, there are guys succeeding. And I mean, we can go across. I mean, Cam Rising. Look what Cam Rising did against Oregon and what he's done thus far for Utah. Some guys are just better at quarterback. I don't know how to describe it. And that's what we got. Also, shout out to Mike Sanford for shaking the eight ball that said, have a good day on offense today. Because that's what it is with Minnesota. That's what we get with Minnesota. Sometimes they're disasters on offense. And sometimes they're like, oh, I guess we'll be competent today. The eight ball said we could be good. And so that's what they were yesterday.
All right. Very quickly, some other matchups here before we get to dudes. In the Big Ten game of the week, we had UTSA winning in late dramatic
fashion. Oh, my God. Did you see that play?
Yeah, over UAB. They didn't cover the 4.5, but they won, and they're 11-0, which is more important. Mm-hmm. We had San Diego State by 8 over UNLV, BYU by 17 over Georgia Southern, and Boise State wins 37-0 over New Mexico. I only bring this game up because New Mexico finished the game with Bryson Carroll at quarterback. Mm-hmm. He was a student team manager 3 weeks ago. He's also 5'6", 195.
Oh,
he primarily
God.
Is a running back, Dan. So,
yeah,
not a great game offensively for the Lobos. They had just a shade over 100 yards as Boise wins 37-0. But shout out Bryson Carroll doing his best.
Yeah.
Play quarterback for the Lobos.
Yeah, a bunch to shout out along the way. By the way, the UTSA play that you talked about, Frank Harris, quarterback.
Big Frank.
Lefty quarterback. Big Frank. Bobbles the snap, scoops it up, somehow manages to not have his knee touch the turf from the angle I could see.
Yep.
Throws it to an awaiting roadrunner in the end zone for the game winner, but it's tipped. The ball's tipped, and the guy still comes down with it. So an incredible, miraculous play to keep UTSA where they are in the sport. You mentioned San Diego State, a very quiet 10-1, a very, very quiet 10-1 for San Diego State and Brady Hoke getting it done in kind of a comeback fashion. I think, was UNLV up in this game, or they had it as a game in the second half? I believe they did.
Yep,
you might have to fact check me on that. Really nice win for Houston to get to 10-1, as we talked about before with Cincinnati. Air Force and Nevada go back and forth. Crazy triple overtime game. That was either Thursday or Friday night. So good for Air Force for pulling it out. ECU, I believe, did they get bowl eligible? Or they got bowl eligible last week, but they beat Navy on the road, right?
Yep.
Mike Houston's not going to be a name that comes up for jobs, I don't believe, this year. But he's got ECU. I mean, he's turned around the Pirates.
ECU wasn't supposed to be very good this year.
No. They're going bowling, so that's really nice for them. I don't know how, like, Hawaii had a crazy shootout. They won 50-48 in the middle of the night against Colorado State, Steve Adazio in Colorado State. We had the caller who mentioned the Raging Cajuns, 42-14 over Liberty on the road.
Yep.
Pretty good.
Really good.
Pretty good. That's why Billy Napier is getting the attention he has. Louisiana season's been kind of weird, but that's a nice win. UTEP getting to 7 wins.
Yep.
I don't know. Is it Dana Dimel? Whatever their coach's name. Getting UTEP to 7. I understand what their schedule looks like. Winning record in Conference USA. Man, that's
good
impressive.
Good on them.
I think he could be a Big 12 quarterback one of these days. Our coach or quarterback, whatever he wants to do. Marshall with a nice win under a first-year coach over Charlotte. And I'm trying to think of anything else, really. You know, Coastal, Crayson McCall is back. Has
Lehigh. Lehigh with the win.
Fine.
17-10 in the rivalry. Lehigh's
still
dead
to me. How did that happen?
They're still dead to me. I don't want to talk about them.
There was a lot of animus in the air in Eastern PA over this matchup.
Yeah, you could feel it. I sent you the photo from the Lehigh campus police had a big thing that they draped over. Maybe I'll tweet that out. They draped it over the building, making fun of Lafayette. So it's a thing. It's a rivalry. It's a longstanding rivalry. Lehigh gets the dub 17-10. Shall we do our dude alerts? Dan, do you have dude alerts to
share?
I have some dudes.
Whoa, 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 it's a
dude alert. As we blast the sound in our
that
earphones.
That was very loud.
I apologize,
Dan. That was
Dan.
Very loud.
Give us some dude alerts.
We'll go with some huge names this week because, God, were they good. Bryce Young, Brennan Armstrong, our guy Bailey Zappi, by the way, 52-17 over FAU. Good for Western Kentucky. You mentioned Aiden O'Connell. Braylon Allen. I mean, geez.
The monster.
Like a DIT, a dude in training. Just ridiculous. He finishes over 200, right?
228 and 3 touchdowns, yeah.
Malik Cunningham, I know, given the opponent, but still, to do 500 total yards and 300 through the air, 200 on the ground, that's just ridiculous.
One
Kobe
man
Pace.
Crew. Yep.
Kobe Pace for Clemson. We didn't really mention him, but a great day. Zach Charbonnet in a rivalry spot, a beautiful rivalry spot. We love the reds and blues of that game. Jordan Addison, obviously, for Pitt. Treylon Burks is just a joy to watch. Will Anderson was all over the place for Alabama on the other side of the ball. Donovan Edwards, he was just there. Was he just there?
He was just there.
And you didn't see him in practice do these things? So those are my dudes for the week.
And Christian
anybody else
Veyu.
You wanted to add?
Christian Veyu. Come on.
Christian Veyu. Not just everybody beats Rutgers, but a lot of people do.
Pride and joy of the great white North. Finally, last but certainly not least. The Big Ten game of the week presented by our good friends over at DraftKings, Dan.
Yes.
Did you see the way the Iowa-Illinois game ended?
I did, yeah. Speaking of a Tommy Boy car, yeah, continue.
The Padilla Flotilla, piloted by Alex Padilla, new starting quarterback at Iowa, was just 6 of 17 for 83 yards at a pick. It was a very Iowa-esque offensive performance. The line for this game, per our friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook, 11, 12, depending when you looked, when you got it. This was a close game until Iowa blew it open, I have that in air quotes, late, when they scored 10 points inside the last 2 minutes to make this one 33-16.
Yes.
So you're thinking, hey, I got the cover in the bag. Heaven help you if you went with Iowa minus double digits. But if you did, you're thinking, I got this thing. We're good.
Yeah.
No problem. There's like a minute left. Not so fast, my friend. Brett Bielema does not play by your rules in November.
No, sir.
As Brandon Peters leads a 5-play, 75-yard drive in garbage time. He hurls a touchdown pass late to Isaiah Williams with 31 seconds left to pull within 10 and complete the improbable, the annoying if you bet on Iowa, the backdoor cover. What a moment.
This is true.
Final score here was 33-23.
By the way, both of these teams terrible at hitting the over. And did the over not hit?
The over did hit because the over was 38.5.
Yeah. And a final score 33-23. So comfortable over in a land of under teams. So
unbelievable.
I don't know. Week 12, sad slice Saturday. And so if you bet the under, which looked like a good bet. Sorry about that. Sorry.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code SOLID. Bet just $1. $1 on any Thanksgiving NFL game, and you win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point.
That's pretty good.
Promo code is SOLID. This Thanksgiving, again, at DraftKings Sportsbook. It's the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Got to be 21 or older. In New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania, only new customers, only restrictions apply. Go see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Damn.
Yeah. Week 13, rivalry week.
Rivalry week. Coming at you. We are going to be doing 3 episodes this coming week, as we always do. Ed Sheeran, for some reason, is playing here on my board.
Again?
I don't know what's going on. I don't even know.
Not a sponsor, could be.
Don't even know what that Ed Sheeran song is.
Yeah.
Week 13, we will be doing our 3 episodes as usual. We'll record the Friday one a little bit earlier so that you and I have Black Friday off. But big week, you throw out the records, right?
Always.
A bunch of matchups with real national significance, with bowl eligibility on the line. Perhaps the most fun week to watch college football as it's spread out over Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We will be back, of course, next weekend to talk about all things that transpired in rivalry week. But before we get there, we've got 3 shows this coming week. We would encourage everybody to subscribe over at solidverbal.com. If you like the show, please do leave us a rating or review out on Apple Podcasts. Please do go on out to solidgiveaway.com where you can be rewarded for leaving us a review out on Apple Podcasts and doing some other things here and there to help the show. Don't forget to go on out to verballers.com for more information about joining the Patreon community. Dan, is there anything I left out?
No, it's going to be a hell of a rivalry week. We've got Egg Bowl Thursday night, and I got invited to a birthday party Saturday night to go bowling, and I haven't been bowling in a long time. Like, I think a lot of us have not been bowling in a long time, and I was like, well, I don't know. It's rivalry week. There's probably a bunch of huge night games. It's just bedlam. It's just bedlam Saturday night. I got, you know, Oregon State's mercifully an early kickoff. It's, I think, a 2:30 Central, 3:30 Eastern kickoff. So spacing out those Thursday, Friday, Saturday rivalry games. Big winner here, Dan the Bowler.
Dan the Bowler. You're going to be using Utah's helmets as you bowl for your perfect 300.
I'm bowling with Michigan people, by the way, a few hours after the Ohio State game. So that'll be fun, right? They'll be super happy and excited and celebratory. Another basket of fries.
You're going to have some folks throwing the ball down the lane just to see how fast they can throw it and get out some rage as opposed to trying to knock the pins down.
We'll see.
Thank you so much to everybody for calling in, for supporting the show, for being part of the Wallerhood. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, thank you so much again for your support. We will be back in just a few short days. Talk all things week 13. In the meantime, as always, you know the drill. Stay solid.
Peace.